Well, I'll do. I said that was the last one. I'll do the haiku version. It's the haiku version of Rilke. All you can look at is missing eyes. This headless torso is too much. I think I got most of it in. Got it in there. I was working for years on paying homage to a relatively wasted childhood on hockey. But great, great dream world and wonderful time as well. And I got away from it for years and years and found that there was actually some resource there that one can exploit for poems. I'm not really interested in recreating hockey games per se, but I was really interested in the sort of spiritual aspects of the game that you could tease out just by being sort of radically metaphorical about the things that go on in a hockey game. And so I'll just read you a couple of examples of the sort of thing that I came up with. I'll read The Watchmaker God, but first I'll read the one about linesmen, whom you thought were insignificant, but this poem wants to tell you different. "Wisdom's secret is detachment, not withdrawal," said Northrop Frye, who was not thinking of these watchers over the lines, selfless students of geometrical vectors and tangents, though he was nothing if not one himself. "See how they are drawn to what happens, yet steer shy of encounters when they near, or how, like salvagers, they keep their distance till a stop in the game, then move in to pick up what others have left off caring about. Do they see the same sport that we do? Not the play, so much as the mechanisms and ligatures of play. Not a dash of heroes into the offensive zone, but the spatial relation of sticks and limbs to a black dot passing foremost or late over a demarcation. They watch the formations widen and converge over lines and circles, mark their scrambled origins, take note of undeflected ice-long trajectories, and follow them diligently to their natural end with the gravity and single-mindedness of English pointers. They are like angels, floaters above the scrimmage or beside it, at once attentive and distracted, who always see more than we do, but who, when you speak of tallies, the campaigns for offensive advantage, the imperatives of victory and defeat, stare blankly and appear to think of higher matters, who know how we go wrong, who know the condition and limits of our movements, our compromised freedoms, whispering an advisory word into the big one's ear. But like us, they know nothing of what will happen next. And as for their thanks at the final horn, they are pleased to pass notice, not be deemed factors in the outcome. The players file out, and soon the rink itself, now deserted, turns to an empty churchyard under moonlights, ice spread over stone. Not haunting the deserted spaces, they remind us, as a novelist once wrote, what becomes of those who live faithfully a hidden life and rest in unvisited tombs. My favorite last line of a novel, George Eliot's Middlemarch. Those who live faithfully a hidden life and rest in unvisited tombs. Amazing. Anyway, so it turns out the linesman is really a poet. The linesman, so on. This is the Watchmaker God. I was trying to picture a play right from a face-off to a goal being scored as a couple of things. The Watchmaker God idea of the universe being spun out into space and the creator standing back and just watching it happen, but also of an actual watch unwinding. Could you describe a hockey game as though it were a watch? With all the bits and pieces in it working in a certain way. I don't think I'll be able to do this in one breath, but I guess it's supposed to have something like that idea going on in it. It is only a game that helps pass the time. Or that's what the first one dreamed, who tossed off the whole idea, making figure eights alone over an icy pond. It goes like this. There is a black hole, and to start an entire assembly, its tension at a peak is thrown at it. At a flick, the cranked-up center wheel circles clockwise, spins motioning towards two glancing pinions dropping sideways. They pivot round the overlapping stud and strike straight up at two high-caliber escape wheels interlocking checks, now dropped from their posts, slip wide at the circle top around the untripped action between them. The tension shifts. The tail end spinner drops in position, takes his feed in turn, and nearing the wind up, flips it on a thread to the now turned in center wheel, driving both hands at exactly the right time. The clock stops. And I'll wager the final outcome that the whole works is carried off in ways that the first one, now long vanished, never even dreamed of when he winged it. Okay, two last little things. One called adverbial. I've just always been curious about that phrase. I don't know if in what way it's used as a phrase, but I've always thought it was as then and then and then, as when you're telling a story, and then and then and then. And the forward momentum of that, even while it's talking about something in the past, just seems odd to me. Always. Curious about it. Anyway, this is what I came up with. Three digs at every moment's perishing is the storyteller's then and then and then, like shovels full of dirt upon the past, funereal art when all is said and done. Or is there on the line a leaping forth, a canter which, so near to finishing, reminds each final word that even then, running out of time is the next best thing. And I'll finish with the title poem. Uncannily, Amanda's and our books sound very similar, groundwork and guesswork. We did not consult one another in any way. our next books, we're gonna just scramble it a bit, and her next book will be called Guess Ground, and mine will be called Work Work. I think that's what we're going to do. This is guesswork. Guesswork. Yeah, the idea, I'm always, it seems to me, a tragedy. Like, there will be a tragedy next week, right? Somebody's going to die next week in a tragedy. And that person is here right now doing something. And we have no idea who that person is going to be. And there's nothing we can do about it. And it may be us. It may not be us. But just fascinating, that fact, that person, those people are here, and the tragedies keep happening. What do poets do about it? Guesswork. Think of the all-too-human sacrifice we'll read of in next Tuesday's paper, zapped in the tub or bumped off by a laundry truck, no part of a weather maker's predictive calculus. And not even the poets know who will be chosen, or precisely when, though it will be someone definite that the bad thing happening will happen too. Even as you read this, he is somewhere among us, puzzling over subscription packages for the shows next year, and what with the spring break to think about, and the perennials to order from the April seed catalog while it is still April. If only we could find him in the crowd, the poets say, and take him aside, the one who will leave us next. But we are blind, and live mainly by guesswork. We go by day into the street among the passers-by. We pull out our hankies and wave them farewell. We are like lovers left standing alone for a while on the station platform after the train has departed, though there is no train, and the streets are full.
Thanks very much.